Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The Search Special.
Hey, it is The Search Special. The Texans, as many of you know, I'd say 98% of you know, we are still looking for our next head coach. And man, I tried to take a break from all of this afternoon, and there's just no taking a break from it. I'm joined by Brandon Scott tonight, who I've known ever since he was a young college kid at the Battle of the Piney Woods, and he came up to me during halftime and introduced himself as a Sports Radio 610 listener. And basically, you know, I talked to him for 3 minutes, and I think I pretty much gave you all the advice in the world that you had needed, and sent you off into the world, and now you're a rousing success. Is that about right? Is that the way you remember it?
It went something like that, Seth. I will say that my relationship with you has been one of the key ones in my career, even in that lull period when we didn't see each other. So it has been a really, like, big deal to know you.
I was just joking. Okay.
I will give you that much. It's funny because I actually don't remember much about that day, but so much came of it because it helped me get here. So it is.
I'll say, cool. You know what? I'll at the end of this segment, I'll give a lesson for the youngsters about why the way you acted that day was very, very important. Why I gave you a very convincing recommendation later on. But obviously, what's going on right now is that around about, I'd say, 11 a.m. or so, 10 a.m., 11 a.m. this morning, John McClain published an article in the Houston Chronicle where he had had an interview with Cal McNair. And Cal cleared some things up, or gave perhaps the Texans' version of the story on a bunch of things. As right now, I don't know if there's ever been an uproar like this over a relatively anonymous position. Like, Jack Easterby, even GMs don't typically get this much scrutiny and focus. You know, Rick Smith would, and some other GMs when things aren't going well do. But this has all been pretty rare, and I guess Cal McNair decided to speak up. Before we go into some of the quotes, Brandon, do you think that this statement made things worse, made things better, everything's the same as it was before?
You know, I think it's good that he talked, Seth, but I don't understand why he had to say the point about Jack Easterby's the scrutiny on him being unjustified. I think that comment in and of itself is unnecessary, even if he actually believes it, because the perception on Cal McNair at this point is that he's out of touch, that he's clueless, that even to some degree that he doesn't know what he's doing and that what direction he wants to go in. And when the consensus is that Jack Easterby on some level, in some way or another, has failed, when that's the consensus with the public, I don't see how he's doing himself any favors by saying specifically that the scrutiny is unjustified. Because for me, Seth, here's the thing. For me, if he's going to say that the scrutiny is unjustified, I feel like he needs to be specific, because there's that much scrutiny. Like, which part exactly? That's what I would like to know, or what I would have followed up with Cal. Like, which part of the scrutiny exactly is unjustified? Is it the part with the personnel decisions? Is it the part that has to deal with what's going on in the locker room? Are you talking about Andre Johnson? Like, which part would it be? Because there's a lot to unpack.
Right. Okay, so the quote is this. The scrutiny on Jack is really unjustified. Jack was put into that role, and McClain adds interim GM. When that's important, and I'll explain that. Jack was put into that role, the organization needed by me. So he put them into that role. If missteps were made during that process, we'll own those within our building. Jack will return to the role he was brought here for and what he grew into after he got here. So I think the biggest disconnect here is that Cal McNair is apparently talking about Jack Easterby's time as interim GM, which for the most part, I don't know if anybody really has an issue with any of the moves he made or anything as interim GM. It was everything that led up to the point where Bill O'Brien was fired. And this, again, there's been this steady drumbeat of people claiming, well, Jack Easterby didn't have anything to do with all the moves that happened with Bill O'Brien and all the trades and all of that. And yet in the press release and the media guide at the beginning of this season, Jack Easterby was credited with reshaping the roster alongside Bill O'Brien. I mean, Jack Easterby had negotiated Deshaun Watson's contract. None of those were interim GM things. Now, there's a chance that what Cal Easterby meant was that he'll return to the role that for which he was originally hired, going back to 2019, right, when he was the director of team development. And so that was when he was going to be doing a lot of – he wasn't going to be as heavily involved in the football operations department. And I'm actually going to – you know what? I'm going to call John and maybe just ask him to clarify that at some point, because that would make more sense. And that's what they said in this statement, was that Nick is in charge of all football personnel, contract negotiations, all those things the GM has for roster building. That's what Nick is really good at, and he's been good at for a long time. Jack will oversee other football operations. And then John McClain added that included strength and rehab, medical, nutrition, anything involving the non-business side of the operation. So team development, the physical training, I would guess maybe some kind of leadership training and everything and the player programs type stuff. But I think the biggest, and I'm burying the lead here, Jack Easterby sticking around.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing, though, Seth, and I've heard you and Sean talk about this in the morning, and I've heard Landry and Lopez talk about it in the Loop midday and pretty much all the shows. I think we understand that Jack's not going anywhere. I think after that press conference, even though there wasn't a lot of clarity that came from it through Cal McNair, and I think a lot of people agreed that there was a lot of stumbling and fumbling through that press conference, I think the one thing that we were clear on after that is that Jack Easterby isn't going anywhere. I don't care what Peter King's got to say. I don't care about maybe what the national media is saying that's a little bit disconnected. We understand how these relationships intersect and what's going on behind the scenes and the pull that Jack Easterby has on Cal McNair and his role in the organization. Like, we're not able to make sense of it, but I do think that we've been able to gather the relationship and how strong it is, and especially once you look at what Jack Easterby's been able to survive.
Right. Oh yeah, I know, from starting with Brian Gain, and that's where, yeah, I mean, you could go over this a million times, and it's just funny because there's so many facets to it. But when you talk about who he's been able to survive, he got here a couple months later. Brian Gain, the GM, was fired. They whiffed on getting Nick Caserio, and they just kind of. And this is where I think Cal is taking responsibility for putting Easterby and O'Brien in that spot. I mean, O'Brien and Easterby had no business doing what they were doing for 17 months. 17 months.
Right.
Well, it wasn't 17 months with O'Brien, but 17 months ago, it was when it all started.
It was long it was, though, Seth. It was that many days too long, right?
Yeah. They had no business being in that role. I suppose it's noble of Cal McNair to fall on his sword and take responsibility for that. And I think that perhaps maybe, you know, it's not like Deshaun is mad at just Jack Easterby.
Right.
Deshaun's mad at a plethora of things. As far as Jack Easterby getting fired and what Peter King had said, I think they'll get rid of him. I think it was a really interesting sign that Jack Easterby basically was told not to talk to Sports Illustrated when that damning report came out. So when that happens, my feeling is, and again, this is probably an exaggeration, but when I heard it, it reminded him of Scott Pioli back in Kansas City, and he felt like it was just a matter of time, because that's what happened with Pioli. I think the difference here is, I think there's a chance the lawyers told Jack Easterby not to talk, because I know lawyers are involved in that whole scenario, and concerning the publication of that article. Sports Illustrated wrote an article that was really pretty adamant that a lot of people, both who used to work for the organization, who worked for the organization now, said that Jack Easterby was a divisive force within the organization. So that's where we all are. I think I've watched people steadily, I think, wonder, okay, what's going on with all this Jack Easterby stuff? Why is this a big deal? You know, Sports Radio 610, you're making too much of this. What are you talking about? I know from conversations with people, people whom I trust, that things are weird over there. Things are really, really weird, and a lot of it starts with Jack Easterby. And I don't think that what management thinks he's doing or the effect that he's having, that effect is not being had.
Right.
Jack Easterby was supposed to be a guy that was going to come and improve the culture. And we have, would you call it a good culture over there, Brandon?
Well, one thing that is interesting to me about what you bring up is that Jack Easterby has found himself in a scenario where the thing that he's supposed to do well or the thing that he's supposed to be touted for, he is now in a position to do. So the genius of it all, Seth, is that he helped create this mess. It wasn't just Jack Easterby, but Jack Easterby, along with Bill O'Brien and along with Kyle McNair's willingness to put them in a position to be in the position that they were in, has put them here. And now Jack Easterby, Mr. Problem Solver, Mr. Crisis Management, Mr. Character Coach, is now in a position to help get them out of this.
To get out of your own mess, right?
Yes.
It's a brilliant way to go about it.
It's marvelous. But I think it seems to me that Jack Easterby has been able to distance himself from the football decisions, and they got the football guy out. So, like, on the one end, he's attached himself to Bill O'Brien as this resource, as this guy who gets to do the things that Bill O'Brien either couldn't do or didn't want to do or didn't have time to do. But then on the other end, he had nothing to do with the football decisions because that's the football guy. To me, it seems pretty clear that they're trying to scapegoat Bill O'Brien, and they want to let Nick Caserio come in here and be the one to clean up Bill O'Brien's mess. And Easterby was just sort of this bystander, even though he gets to get credit for helping negotiate Deshaun Watson's contract, which you or I could have done, or anyone else listening.
Here's a boatload of money.
Exactly.
I think there are people in the organization that just flat out don't want to be there. At least the way they feel right now is that they don't want to be there if Jack Easterby is going to be there. That could change over time. I know I felt very strongly about certain people in my life and certain organizations before. And over time, it's like any show you watch on HBO or otherwise, like Game of Thrones or The Sopranos or anything.
Right.
Friends become enemies, enemies become friends, you forget, you forgive, all that. I think what the Texans are hoping right now is that, okay, Jack Easterby goes off and goes back into his original role, and Caserio handles the stuff he should be handling. A new head coach handles the stuff he should be handling. And Easterby kind of works a little bit more behind the scenes.
Right.
Do you think that's possible, realistic, or feasible?
It's my solution. I don't know how possible, realistic, or feasible it is. I think it's the only solution, though. Like, here's my thing, Seth. This is what I think needs to happen. They need to nail the head coaching hire, obviously. That's not a hot take. We all understand and agree with that. Nail the head coaching hire. Get somebody in here that you both believe in, that Deshaun likes, that's competent, that's a good head coach, obviously. But from there, after that, what needs to happen is Nick Caserio, whoever the head coach is, and Deshaun Watson, and maybe a couple other leaders from the locker room, whether it's JJ or whoever else it is that stays around, they need to get in a room together. And whether Jack Easterby's in the room or not, to me, doesn't matter. But I think they all need to get in a room together. Everyone who's in a position of power, influence on the football side of the team, needs to get in a room together and decide and understand what it is that Jack Easterby's going to be doing. And I think if they can all get on the same page on what the roles are and everybody playing their position, that you can move on from this. I don't think this is insurmountable, but everybody's got to communicate, get in a room together, and clarify what's going to be happening. We're not going to have Jack Easterby in here giving motivational speeches or coaching guys on the sideline during training camp or anything like that. You know, that's going to be the football coach, the new staff, or whatever it is, and that's going to be Nick Caserio, but not Jack Easterby. And like what you said, going back into doing whatever the role was that they hired him to do in the beginning.
Well, you know, I was listening to Urban Meyer on this podcast about trust or about leadership. He did a bunch of leadership stuff while he was out of football. Now, of course, he's the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And he talked about, you know, one of the core things that you need in an organization for it to work at the highest level is trust. If you don't have trust, you're just screwed. And he said that's the most vital thing, but also because of that, it's the hardest thing to fix, and it takes really hard conversations. And I do think some of the players that basically are untouchable, like Deshaun Watson or Laremy Tunsil, or some of the guys that are, you know, younger guys on longer contracts, I'm not including JJ in that conversation because JJ is not quite untouchable anymore because of his contract and his age and all of that. Some of those guys, I think, need to be willing to be very, very frank. And I don't doubt that they will be, but hopefully the organization listens. And I hope Jack Easterby listens, because I think whatever Jack Easterby thinks he's doing, it's I've had the conversations. It's not landing. At least with certain people, it's not landing. Okay, real quick. What you did at the Battle of the Piney Woods was, I was broadcasting the game. I was doing color commentary. You were an undergrad. You were working for your sports information department.
Right.
And I just came in, and you came up and introduced yourself to me. And this is a lesson for young people talking to people. You didn't do a single thing to try to impress me. You gave me a bunch of really, really good information about the game. Like, we had a nice little conversation, but then I had some questions about the matchup and everything, and you've been covering the team all year long, so obviously, or all through your undergrad. So you gave me some really, really good information and answered my questions, and you just came off really mature. So I wasn't – all I remembered from you was like, oh, wow, that kid is really mature, and he really, really helped me. I don't – if you had told me that you had like a 4.0 GPA or how smart your hot take about such and such was, I would have written you off as like another Colin Coward wannabe. So they'll be helpful. Be of use. If you have an internship, do whatever you can to be of use. That's what people remember.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that is that I really wasn't thinking about trying to impress you. I was just, you know, honored to kind of meet you in the moment. And beyond that, I was there for the job. Like, it wasn't really about me.
The job you were doing.
The job that I was doing. And I think that's what's helped me out, is like actually being passionate about the job and the thing that you're doing. And for me, I think everything else takes care of itself, because, like, I didn't have the 4.0 GPA and I did not have a hot take for you or anything like that. But I had been covering the team and I did care about what we were there for. So I think that went a long way.
So coming up next, there's more cryptic tweets. Can't get enough cryptic tweets these days. And we've talked so much about Jack Easterby. There is a coaching search going on. What is Deshaun mad at? What does he want to improve? And which coaches do you think he's actually looking for? Coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Search Special.
It's The Search Special. I'm Seth Bain. I'm with Brandon Scott. And this afternoon got super interesting. And I was asleep during this, Brandon. I really needed a break from all this damn drama. I eagerly await the point where we can get back to just talking about boring football stuff instead of the exciting stuff.
I'm the same way, man. I'm right there with you.
So we talked about the statement that Cal McNair delivered, where he tried to clarify some things. He said that Jack Easterby is sticking around. And everybody was hashing that out and talking about that. And then all of a sudden, Deshaun tweets out, "I was on 2, then I took it to 10. Immediately, what you think is, okay, Adam Schefter had tweeted a few days ago that when Nick Caserio was hired, if Deshaun were at an anger level 2 after the DeAndre Hopkins trade, now he's at a 10.
Yeah.
So then Deshaun tweets out, "I was on 2, then I took it to 10. He does this right after Cal McNair delivered his statement. And I thought, for you know what I do at first, you I don't want to sound as old as I am, so I want to be sure that, okay, this is definitely a rap lyric, right? But this is like kind of an obscure rap lyric, right, Brandon?
Yeah, it's an obscure rap lyric, at least for me, because it wasn't a song. Like, I listened to, you know, some of the same music that Deshaun Watson listens to, but I hadn't heard this song. But I knew, even having not heard the song, immediately that it was a rap lyric, simply because this is what Deshaun Watson does. Like this is his MO. And I think that it was very easy to tie it to the quote, that we remember. But for me, it was easy to tie the quote to the rap lyric because that's what he does. Like he was tweeting out rap lyrics before we ever heard this quote. So
right.
So to me, all of it is really consistent. It is a really obscure rap lyric. Not just that though, it's also not a very cool song. Like it's not Future's best work by
well,
any means.
I'm let down by Deshaun. Now you know what? I think I might be starting to side with Jack Easterby now.
Nah, if you're not I'll tell you this. Deshaun has put me on to some pretty cool music like over time. I will say that. But this one ain't it.
This isn't it.
This one ain't it. But I did feel like this was more of him.
Do you think he's just trolling now? I don't think he – honestly, I'd be upset if he was merely trolling because our nerves are raw and bare right now as sports fans. I don't think we deserve to be trolled. So I choose to believe that he was just basically saying, no, I don't like Cal McNair's statement.
So that – I think it was a partial troll. But to me, Seth, and you tell me what you think about this, but to me this shows me how calculated that quote was to Adam Schefter.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because they're so consistent, you know.
Well, yeah, and I wonder, I don't know, Schefter, and you trust Schefter, right? Schefter
yeah,
doesn't.
For sure.
If Schefter ever gets anything wrong, it's because there's a miscommunication or somebody flat out lied to him. So I hadn't really been thinking at the time, like, okay, for Schefter to say if he was at a 2, now he's at a 10, like, I thought that was him actually writing it and coming up with that. But that came from somebody in Deshaun's camp, and they might have used that specific verbiage.
Exactly,
right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. So to me, I think he's partly fanning the flames a little bit. You know, Deshaun doesn't strike me as that type of guy that feeds off of this kind of energy. So I'm not trying to make him be more messy than he is, but it did feel that way with it being on a Friday. Seth, you said you were sleeping when all this happened. You want to know what I was doing? Huh. I like to fancy myself as having like the best hair at Sports Radio 610. I was getting my dreadlocks retwisted, man. I was trying to take some time off myself. I was in a stage where I was trying to be positive about the day too and focus on the head coaches and what's going to happen and all these things.
I gave myself that pep talk after the show today. I said, you know what? It's just nothing but negativity right now. We got to really just dial in on this coaching search.
Seth, I've spent the better part of the day, and even before I went to go get the locks twisted, I spent the better part of the day selling myself on every single known Texans head coaching candidate. Not being a pessimist, like, I don't want that guy, I want this guy. No, I sold myself on every guy from Jim Caldwell to Leslie Frazier to Joe Brady to Brandon Staley to of course, obviously, Eric Bieniemy. I've sold myself on all of these guys throughout the day. And then how does it end? With Deshaun Watson fanning the flames.
Well, look, I was told that I was told by somebody I really trust that Deshaun Watson was a huge fan of Robert Saleh, who took the job with the Jets. And I think that's an important thing because I think nationally, because Deshaun was asked about Eric Bieniemy a couple times and said some really nice things about Eric Bieniemy, I think people had this perception that Deshaun is locked in on Eric Bieniemy. I think Deshaun understands that there are probably several qualified coaches, but that he is concerned about the team. He's never said we need to bring in somebody to fix this offense or make the offense better or to make me personally better. He wants a culture shift. He said that. He wants a more focused leadership. And Robert Saleh was lauded as one of those guys. So I don't know. I don't know if we talk about what is he upset about. There's obviously it all really went down after Nick Caserio was hired. That's when we found out that Deshaun might be really upset, like more than just what he had sounded like after the game was over. And I think a lot of that was that it felt like doubling down on the culture. It felt like doubling down on the Patriots culture. And Jack Easterby was probably a part of that, you know? So there's that. And I suppose, it's also the people that I think sometimes we forget about the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Like, it's really strange, but I think sometimes we forget that, hey, Deshaun had a really good year passing the ball and was a passing yardage leader, all of that. Had a great year on a personal level statistically, except for actually scoring touchdowns.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that they weren't good in the red zone or as good in the red zone was that they lost DeAndre Hopkins, and you brought in David Johnson and Randall Cobb. Brandon Cooks worked out, but 2 out of 3 is not good.
Yeah, well, and that you also couldn't run the ball, right? I mean, that's also part of it, I think. But yeah, no, I mean, So if we're ranking them or trying to put them all in context, I think that all roads have to lead back to Jack Easterby, and not just Jack Easterby, but what happened or the foundation that Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien set.
Right. Because you can't forget the Andre Johnson tweet either. As much as DeAndre is cryptic, Andre just spelled it out. Deshaun Watson should stand his ground. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. So
what I'm trying to figure out, Seth, is, and I think this is kind of at the heart of your question, because I think we would both agree that if we were to put these things in order, that we would probably start with Jack Easterby. But as it pertains to that, I'm more curious, and what I don't have a good grasp of yet is whether it's more of what of Jack Easterby's mere presence and him like being around and what he does like around or his actual results and the things that he has done, if that
right.
makes sense, like the structural damage, the cosmetic damage versus the structural damage.
And look, even if they got rid of Jack Easterby, I don't think that would have been the end of it, because this is the conversation that Deshaun needs to have with Cal. Deshaun needs to be assured that it's not going to happen again, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yes.
This happened. If ownership isn't even admitting really that Jack Easterby is a problem or anything, then how deep is it and how fixable does Deshaun think it is? And we'll get to this next. Which coach is out there? Does A, maybe Deshaun like? B, does the rest of the team, really, who's the best coach out there? And C, I can't wait to hear you and how you talked yourself into all of these guys, including Dan Campbell, who looks like he's getting close to taking the job in Detroit. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Search Special.
It's The Search Special. I'm here with Brandon Scott, and Brandon told me earlier that this afternoon, before Deshaun tweeted out, Brandon's responsible for all of our digital content. Us hosts are supposed to write a few things every now and then, and some of us do. I'm not one of them that's as good at it. But Brandon pumps out. How many articles a day do you pump out?
Oh, it varies from day to day, but on a given day, I might do four to five.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you write 5 articles a day. You're just trying to get your locks retwisted?
Yeah, that's
Let's
right.
That
yeah,
right.
That, that's good. Right. Yeah, that's acceptable. Right. Yeah.
I feel proud of myself for saying that. So taking some time for yourself. Then Deshaun tweeted out and mayhem ensued and you had to go out and pump out a bunch of other articles. But one of the things you were trying to do when you're trying to move past like all this drama and negativity was you were trying to psych yourself up for the potential coaches out there that the Texans might hire. So that you would have no matter what happens,
yes.
right? Barring like a super cryptic tweet from Deshaun Watson that expresses negativity about it, other than that, like you're going to be excited about if you hear, let's say, Jim Caldwell. What'd you talk yourself into about Jim Caldwell?
Your interview with Glover Quinn.
Yeah,
that's basically it. Like the idea that Jim Caldwell does have that leader of men quality that I think is really like important, and I do think that there's something to the idea that he could be a calming voice. Now, he's the exact opposite of what Cal McNair described as what the head coach would be in terms of being not being an introvert. Like, I don't know Jim Caldwell personally, but the look on his face does not say that he is anything but an introvert.
It's from what I can tell. This is a little bit that it's kind of our meme culture now,
yeah.
where sometimes you can paint a picture of a person just with one photo over and over again. I think he is more animated than that, and
yeah.
not just by what Glover Quinn said, but I've seen some videos of him. But he's definitely not – look, he's not a firebrand, you know. He's not
yeah.
somebody that's just out there, like, stoking the flames. He's certainly not a Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
But, man, Glover Quinn just gushed and gushed about him.
Right, and even before that, like – before y'all did that interview, my general thought on Jim Caldwell was you don't get to coach Peyton Manning for as long as he did and just be some schmuck. You know, like I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
So if he's coaching Peyton Manning, I feel like that there's got to be some credibility there. And then beyond that, the job that he did with the Lions, let's not forget, like if we're going to bash Matt Patricia for the job that he did with the Lions, let's not forget that apparently 9-7 wasn't good enough for the Lions. And all they did after they fired Jim Caldwell and hired Matt Patricia was go backwards. Like Jim Caldwell got there And they were kind of going down under Jim Schwartz. They had had a couple of back-to-back losing seasons. And Jim Caldwell sort of turned things around. Like, it wasn't perfect, but Jim Caldwell was – they were trending in the right direction and then went backwards, I feel like, with Matt Patricia. So I'm not really down on the experience that he had with the Lions because – they were the Lions, and they lioned, you know. So I think with another opportunity, like outside of that, he was successful with Peyton Manning. So I don't see why to be down on him other than the memeable face.
Well, he also – negatives, memeable face.
Memeable face.
So the other big positive with him was that he took the Ravens to the Super Bowl. Cam Cameron was the offensive coordinator at the beginning of the year. The Texans destroyed that Ravens team that year. Partly just mostly because the Texans defense just crushed the offense, like turnover after turnover. And Jim Caldwell took over midseason and really modernized that offense. Cam Cameron did a lot of stuff like that he used to just ask your receivers to line up and get open on the outside and then we'll see what happened. Jim Caldwell really modernized that offense and got the absolute best out of Joe Flacco. It's kind of a shame, I suppose, that he moved on after that. It would have been nice for Joe Flacco, maybe, if he had stuck around. So, especially after talking to Glover Quinn, because, look, players are going to say nice things about their old coaches.
Right.
Glover Quinn was like trying to get him nominated for president. You know, like he was really putting it in. Okay, so Jim Caldwell is in the mix. Joe Brady, what about Joe Brady?
So Joe Brady falls under the category of, and this is one of the things that I feel like I want most out of specifically the next Texans head coach. It doesn't have to be like any head coaching opening, like all of the seven that we had. Everybody's got to look for this exact thing. But I think specific to the Texans, the thing that I wanted or feel like they need is the guy who does the most with the least. And look, I know Joe Brady just, you know, a couple of years ago had, you know, the LSU national title team, you know, a bunch of guys that are either in the NFL or going to the NFL pretty soon. But what he was dealing with over there in Carolina this year was not a lot. It wasn't a lot at all, especially when you consider what happened with Christian McCaffrey. I don't think anybody has confused Teddy Bridgewater to be elite. Like he's about an average quarterback, and they were able to do some things. You know, I wasn't always necessarily impressed with their play calling, but their overall production, I thought, was something that you could not sneeze at. And so for him to do that in his first year in the NFL, to take what were basically scraps and to do something with them, I thought that was impressive. I think there could be something there.
Right. And look, Teddy Bridgewater kind of went on a downhill slide the last several games of the season, but Joe Brady's offense and what he's good at, I think, he wasn't able to do all of that with Teddy Bridgewater. And it's just Teddy does not have that ability to really push the ball downfield. So he's kind of limited, and defenses start to get a bead on what he can and cannot do. I think that Joe Brady would fit the psychology of Deshaun Watson really well, because Joe Brady will run a bunch of vertical routes. Like, he is not afraid to push the ball downfield.
Yeah.
When he was in New Orleans, you know, he was an assistant. I think it prepared him for a lot of the parts of the NFL that shows you what you can do with a quarterback who doesn't have an incredible arm anymore, because they had to work with Drew Brees, and he's worked with Teddy Bridgewater. I think he'd be a kid in a candy store with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And I think he'd see a different version of his NFL offense.
Right, yeah. It's more like think back to what you saw at LSU, more of what you were seeing, what he did with Joe Burrow. Like, that's how you kind of envision it going with Deshaun Watson.
Well, in Joe Burrow – wasn't, you know, Joe Burrow wasn't who we ended up being either until he was in Joe Brady's
office. Exactly.
I give a lot of credit to Joe Burrow for that.
I also like the tie to Sean Payton too. Like that intrigues me. You know, having been around Sean Payton, the guy that I really respect as far as a football coach. So that coming from that stock to me is also a plus.
He is also only 31 years old, which is ridiculously young.
Yeah, well,
like,
so
I'd like my coach to be old enough to be president.
Yeah,
it's just at the very least, maybe what others say about him is going to be really important. You know, how much respect does he command? I remember when Kyle Shanahan came to the Texans as a receivers coach.
Yeah,
and you're looking at him, and you're like, gosh, is that? Is he a full grown adult? Who is this kid? And he's coaching Andre Johnson, you know.
Yeah.
But he knew his stuff. He just flat out, he was so competent. They said the same thing about Wade Phillips when he was the Oilers. You know, he was just a little baby boy coaching, you know, Robert Brazil and these guys, but he flat out knew his stuff and he got his respect, their respect.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I'm actually intrigued about by Joe Brady, because as you know, I am also 31 years old. So Joe Brady and I are born in the same year. And I've got this thing for, like, you know, athletes and sports figures who were born in the year 1989, since that's the year that I was born. So, like, I feel this connection to J.J. Watt. I feel this connection to George Springer, who was also born in 1989. I kind of felt a connection to James Harden until he kind of pissed it away, because he's also born in 1989. And Joe Brady would be somewhere around there. He's actually a couple of months younger than me. So I'm rooting for that from that angle and that standpoint, because I'm the exact same age. But the other end of that, Seth, and the question mark that I have about Joe Brady is the whole leader of men thing, because I can't speak to that. I don't know if we have great examples, or at least I haven't seen them yet. If y'all have got them, forward them to me. Hit me up if you know any. But all I really know and can apply Joe Brady to is the X's and O's stuff. And I don't really know if he's got all of those other intangibles that we might value in a Jim Caldwell, or say even a Robert Saleh, who hasn't been a head coach yet, but is one of the reasons why we think he'll be really good.
Sean McVay was 30 years old when he took over. So 30 years and 11 months old.
Okay.
Lane Kiffin was 31 years, 8 months. Harlan Sfare in 1930 was 31 years old. Like, honestly, like in the modern NFL, back in the 1920s and 30s, there were a ton of people, you know, because it wasn't like people were making good coin back then or anything either. But it really, 30 and 31 is the youngest it's been in the modern NFL. And until you get up to, well, Don Shula. Now, Don Shula was a retiring NFL player, too, and very well respected. He was 33 years old. Josh McDaniels was 32. John Madden was 32.
I feel like all of those guys, though, I feel like did maybe have a little bit more NFL experience, if I'm not wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, right?
Yeah, they did. Well, David Shula, I mean, yeah, pretty much. Raheem Morris did, for sure. David Shula did. Josh McDaniels.
Even McVay, I feel like, right?
And McVay had been around a while in the NFL, like straight out of college. So you're right. That's the big difference, is somebody who's 31 and has had very, very little actual NFL experience. Boy.
Right. Which is also the impressive thing, though.
It makes me nervous,
and it impresses me because it's such a short, meteoric, Jack Easterby-like rise, you know, like to just go from here to there so quickly.
Well, Lane Kiffin was a quality control coach when I was in Jacksonville, and I didn't even really know. Like, I was just a young kid myself at that time. He's my age. And I just thought of him as I honestly didn't know his dad was Monty Kiffin.
Right.
I never made the connection until I was talking to him one day. But he just seemed like kind of a cocky young kid. And then I find out, I'm just watching the news 3 years later, like, oh, Lane Kiffin's got the job with the Raiders. What the hell?
So did you never talk football with him, or like pick his brain to see if he knew anything?
No, I did. He was really smart. But he was working on the offensive side of the ball, so I didn't talk to him as much. But I can remember, you know, he was real cocky and would, like, kind of talk about players on the team to me. He'd be like, I don't know. Like, everybody's all excited about this linebacker. Like, I don't think he's that good. I'm like, what the hell are you? And he's Lane Kiffin. That's him. He was always that way. He came out of the womb exactly that cocky. I guess the one name that I'd be most skeptical of, or I guess, you know, that I've come around on. I was skeptical of it first, but now I'm really coming around on him a lot, is Brandon Staley, who's the Rams defensive coordinator.
Yes.
And again, I would say, look, I know that Deshaun was really high on Robert Saleh. I don't think Deshaun, not that it's just Deshaun's decision, obviously, but that's, I want somebody that the team's going to get excited about. People love Brandon Staley.
Don't they? Like everything you read about Brandon Staley. I know this is a time for really good PR, and people are trying to position themselves for jobs. And when you're reading stuff, you want to keep all of these things in context, especially for me as a journalist. And I kind of know how these things work, and I know how we get information, how these features come about, so to speak. So I try to keep that in context and realize, okay, some of these puff pieces are that way by design. But when I read about Brandon Staley in ESPN.com, when I read about him in The Athletic, when I look at what Aaron Wilson did at the Houston Chronicle on him just a couple of days ago, or maybe even just yesterday, like everything is just so impressive, everything about Brandon Staley. And the thing about him that I think sets him apart or what I think differentiates him from me is he, to me, is basically kind of the Robert Saleh with the cute, like, and I'm not talking about schematically. I'm just talking about defensive guy with energy, sort of young, even younger than Robert Saleh, but a younger defensive guy with energy, leader of men. But then he's got that quarterback background that really impresses me, that really intrigues me, in at least in how he views the game, how he applies that to his defensive concepts, and how he uses that to help build up his defensive players. And then also what that could mean for Deshaun, because so many of us talk about, you know, bringing in a quarterback whisperer. If you remember back when they hired Bill O'Brien, even before they necessarily had a quarterback, they were talking about, oh, we need a quarterback whisperer, and Bill O'Brien's going to be a quarterback whisperer. And none of that ever happened. And so, I don't even know, though, that that's necessary, given that Deshaun had the season that he's had and he's had the success that he's had without a quarterback whisperer. So I don't even know that you need that, but I love that he has that element to go with the whole defensive background and the success that he's having with the Rams.
I wonder, Brandon, for one, the teams are getting younger in the NFL. It's just been a trend that rosters are getting younger and younger. And two, you know, the trend forever has been, all right, you find somebody who's a good offensive coordinator, you hire him. You find somebody who's a good defensive coordinator, you hire him. And then let's see. Maybe teams are starting to put more of an emphasis on people who are just flat out leaders.
Right.
You know, because there are a lot of coordinators that are good at leading on that level, but they don't necessarily have to set the tone for an entire team. The head coach has already done that for them. So they're more about the X's and O's, or maybe they're good at working with guys on an individual level. But it's just it's an entirely different job than being a coordinator. Every head coach I've ever known has told me that those first couple years as a head coach, you really learn, like, man, I just cannot spend as much time as I really want on the offense or the defense. It's just, you got to learn to delegate, because there's always some fire you're putting out. There's always somebody else that needs help on the other side of the ball. So I think maybe now, because we're seeing what Jerod Mayo, I think, is going to be genuinely considered for jobs, including with the Houston Texans, I think.
Yeah.
I think Deuce Staley just got an interview with the Eagles.
Oh, and, wow. Know, yeah. I did not see that.
Aaron Glenn interviewed with the Jets. So yeah, these are some – I don't think Deuce Staley has been a coordinator, unless I'm wrong. So these are guys that were players and are position coaches, but there's something about their leadership ability. And, you know, I played with Aaron Glenn. I think he's one of the best leaders I've ever been around, one of the most mature players when he was a player, and probably just one of the most prepared and thorough and detail-oriented people I know. I think he could be a really good head coach someday. And maybe a lot of owners who got tired of just hiring the next Joe Philbin or something, you know, like somebody who's a good coordinator but doesn't have that charisma and that it, they're just going to bypass the whole process and say, all right, just give me the guy that I know can actually lead people.
Yeah, well, the example that you use all the time that I hear you use on the air, Seth, is Norv Turner, right? Like an excellent coordinator, you know, maybe even a guy to this day you might like as a coordinator, but has been proven to not be an effective head coach. And so it's not necessarily the criteria. You know, I even asked Deshaun about this. I think I want to say it was the Monday after the season, you know, so after the season was over, after that last game. And I asked him just straight up, so we have an answer to this, whether he wants an offensive or defensive-minded coach. And from his answer, like, I think he gave a more party-line answer, like whatever the organization decides. But what I gathered from his answer was that he's not hung up on it's got to be an offensive guy, it's got to be a guy who likes to throw the ball downfield necessarily, you know, even though that's going to be his strength, you're going to want to play to his strengths. But it doesn't have to be necessarily a specific philosophy. It's just got to be one that you can believe in. Whatever the philosophy is, it's just got to exist. Be one that you can believe in. And then from there, be that leader of men. Like, you've got to be sort of an expert in something. I do feel like you should specialize in something. Like, that helps. But if you specialize in leadership, I think that's going to go a long way. That's why everyone loves the Urban Meyer hire so much. It's because he specializes in leadership. And I think it's because he does that. And he's been so adaptable and been able to do so many different things at all of the different places that he's won. Like, the reason why he's won everywhere is because he's adapted everywhere he's been. Like, it's never looked the same for Urban in all of the different places that he's been. And so that shows you that leadership quality. Why, hey, you know, I don't really know I couldn't tell you what Urban's X's and O's identity is, quite honestly. If you had, maybe you could because you're the actual former football player. But I can't as the layman. All I can tell you is that everywhere he goes, he switches it up and he does something different and compliments the guys he's got.
Well, and that's actually, you know what? It's harder to tell these days than it would have been 10 years ago because the offenses in the NFL and in college have melded so much more. And what Urban Meyer has always done is had a quarterback run heavy approach. And that used to be unheard of in the NFL. And even when it started being heard of in 2011, you know, it was always as an avenue or as a transition into something else. But I think two things. Urban Meyer is a super intelligent person. You can say what you want about him and any other things with his player discipline or anything like that. He's very, very intelligent. And he's paid attention and he spent several years at ESPN. And I think he knows which tweaks he's going to need to make. And he's going to hire coordinators who have offensive and NFL experience, you know. And then it does come down to, look, this guy is a master of human psychology. And like you said, going to Utah, completely different challenge. And he turned that around immediately. Going to Florida, completely different challenge, different administrators, different boosters. Had success within 2 years there. Goes to Ohio State, completely different set of challenges. I think he's going to thrive. Unfortunately, he's also getting what people are calling the best quarterback prospect since Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Which can all go south. We know that. But people were kind of on the fence as to whether Andrew Luck was as good a prospect as Peyton Manning. They're just bypassing Andrew Luck and going straight to Peyton Manning. So
yeah, does it feel like Andrew Luck never happened? Like
it feels kind of like a weird dream, doesn't it?
Yeah, like it never happened because you don't hear from him anymore. So well, it's like kinda, it never happened.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he has like no desire, I think, to be involved at all. I don't think he's ever coming back. He's got his architecture degree. He's probably like sketching pictures of buildings in Rome with his family or something. I think he's completely done. And it feels like a faint dream in a memory because he never really did what you would have drafted a guy and hoped to get out of that guy. He was a hell of a player, but they just.
Yeah, my wife works at a mental health hospital that's close to Stratford High School where he went to school. And, like, every time I drive by there, I'm, like, hoping to maybe see him running the track or something.
Just
like
just working out.
Yeah, just random.
Hey, Cal McNair delivered a statement today. Did it have the desired effect? Do you feel any better about where the Texans are right now? That's coming up next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.